Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Tom.
Hello. Stuart, not that I want to give away our subject for today, but I saw that we're doing, from the notes, that we're doing vitamins. It's
vitamins,
Stuart's time. Yeah. And I just wanted, before we started, to recount a story that a doctor friend of mine once told me about, which is, he said that if you buy a box of vitamins, you might as well just walk to the toilet and throw them all straight down it one by one. is that the whole conclusion?
I'm not going to reveal the conclusion to this episode about vitamin D, Tom.
Okay.
Whether or not your doctor friend was right, we can return to that anecdote at the end about throwing vitamins down the toilet. But yes, this is indeed an episode about vitamin D. Welcome to the study show. We're going to talk about some of the evidence and controversy surrounding vitamin D, which you hear a lot of claims about.
I think
there might be quite a lot of misconceptions about it as well.
Jolly good. Yes, all right. Yes. So what do people, what are the, I think I've seen it in the media a lot. I think I've seen from people talking about being vitamin D, among other things, being an incredible cure for COVID or something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the last time I was really involved in this debate, I wrote an article in 2021 during the COVID pandemic because there had been a big thing about vitamin D, particularly because two British members of Parliament, one from the Labour Party and one from the Conservative Party, so it was a nice bipartisan
hands across,
thing.
Reaching across the aisle.
Yes, exactly.
It's lovely to see.
Yeah, exactly. They had written about how important vitamin D was, and they had become convinced that it was preventative against COVID.
Oh.
And one of the Labour MP is Rupa Huck, who, if anyone ever watched Blue Peter, her sister is Connie Huck, who was a Blue Peter presenter. If anyone's not from the UK, then this is a beloved UK children's TV program.
Yes, and Connie Huck is married to Charlie Brooker, the creator of Black Mirror.
Black Mirror, yeah.
But more importantly, the creator of the unbelievably hilarious TV Go Home series, I can't tell you how funny it was. It was just so good. And then everyone else found out about him through something else, and I was really gutted because, like, he was, you know,
I liked him first.
He was mine.
Hipster. But anyway, the point is, his wife's sister is an MP. His sister-in-law is an MP. And she wrote an article in the Evening Standard in 2021, and it said that vitamin D is a, quote, wonder stuff. Which offers us all hope to stamp out this dreaded disease, that's COVID.
Jesus.
With no downsides. And this sounds great, but unfortunately it's being, quote, hushed up. Perhaps because big pharma are not involved. And so the idea is that vaccines are more expensive.
Yeah.
And the reason that they're being made more glamorous in the media is because big pharma can sell us vaccines and not sell us these cheap generic pills that have, you know, cod liver oil or whatever, that have vitamin D in them.
I have two comments here.
Yes.
One is that, didn't Wonder Stuff release Size of a Cow?
It's Wonder Stuff with a lowercase W.
Okay, fair enough. All right. But my second point is, she's so right, no one has never occurred to anyone to sell us vitamin supplements. Gosh, no one has ever tried to.
The supplement industry is a massive, massive thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a very silly thing to say. Yeah. But it was particularly silly because at the time, there wasn't any really convincing evidence that vitamin D was preventative
of COVID.
For COVID. There was, however, some correlational evidence, and we'll come to the distinction between this, because really one of the big things that I wanted to get across in this episode is that the correlational evidence and the evidence from randomized trials can often diverge quite substantially. So that's really what I wanted to talk about. And, you know, as you've said, there's a lot of claims. It wasn't just during COVID. There's a lot of claims about vitamin D being helpful for almost everything you can imagine.
Yeah.
Cardiovascular disease, depression, Alzheimer's, mortality in general. Like, it makes you live longer if you take it.
It's funny, like, because I don't know what it is about vitamin D, but also I feel like similar claims are made about vitamin C, that it can kill cancer, cure or prevent or reduce the outcome of, you know, reduce the impacts of cancer. That I think it has magical sort of properties for reducing infections, all this sort of stuff. But I don't know why. Well, Well, Matt, I hope we'll find out in the course of this episode why it is that these ones are not vitamin K or whatever have got been focused on for these particular...
Well, I mean, it's just, we can do a whole episode on vitamin C, because the whole history there with Linus Pauling and taking massive mega doses of vitamin C to protect yourself against colds and things like that. But this is just, we're just going to talk about vitamin D today, because I think there's a lot to say just about D. Because of the amazing claims that people have made about it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So tell me about it. Tell me what are the basics? Tell
me the basics are, and the things that we really actually definitely know that vitamin D does are related to bones, right? It's all about bones.
Okay.
Presumably you've seen pictures of people with rickets.
Yes. I was going to jump in at this point when I read the notes saying, yes, like Garrincha, the very famous Brazilian football player from, I think, the 70s.
Never heard of him.
Obviously you haven't, because you have no joy in your soul. But
That's right.
But he was a famous, brilliant Brazilian football player, great dribbler. I think he was part of the 1970 World Cup winning team. and he famously had these bowed legs. And and I'd always got it in my head that it was rickets, but actually I looked it up to just before I came out, and it was some condition he was born with and nothing to do with that. So completely undermined my point, and I was very annoyed.
You can get rickets for multiple different reasons. You can get rickets for a dietary deficiency of vitamin D, or you can get it from a genetic problem where the vitamin D system doesn't work. It's my understanding. So
maybe he does.
It's all due to a vitamin D deficiency, but I think there are some people who have a congenital problem that causes them to have a vitamin D deficiency. They can't metabolize it in the way that other people can. But the point is, this is a childhood disease. Adults don't get rickets. Adults get there's an adult version called osteomalacia, which is a kind of the softening of the bones. But rickets is you get those characteristic bowed legs, and it's caused by a lack of vitamin D as you're developing.
Okay. Which causes them to be sort of soft and bendy when they should be rigid and...
Exactly. Yeah. So the right chemical reactions have not taken place for the calcium and the phosphorus that make up your bones to develop in the right way. And and we understand the mechanism of this quite well. So, you get vitamin D from the sun, it's synthesized in your skin, or you get it from food like... fish, oily fish, and things like that. It gets metabolized in both your liver and your kidneys, and that makes it into a slight variation on the chemical. And by the way, there are multiple different types of vitamin D that you can take in, but it doesn't matter because it all gets metabolized and turned into the right stuff. And that's released into the bloodstream, and it then basically controls how much calcium and phosphorus go between the blood and the bones.
Oh.
And so a lot of the time your bones are actually releasing calcium into your bloodstream, which is important.
And sometimes get kidney stones, is that right? I seem to remember a fact I heard recently, when astronauts go into space, they lose bone mass and often end up getting kidney stones because the calcium is coming out into their blood.
Right. So
related, I imagine.
That sounds very plausible, yeah. This is constantly happening, and particularly during childhood, there's an awful lot of this happening because everything's developing. And if you don't have enough vitamin D, basically the calcium doesn't get delivered to the bones in the right way that's needed to develop the kind of solid collagen, and it instead develops into a kind of softer type of bone. And it's much more complicated than this. There's an awful lot more going on, but that's the basic idea. It kind of regulates how much calcium is in your calcium and phosphorus is in your bones versus how much is in your blood, and so you need to have it at the right levels.
It's not building your bones; it's more doing like a job like insulin does or something, and telling your body how much.
Yeah.
It's a control mechanism rather than the construction.
Do you know it becomes a hormone? It's officially referred to as a hormone when it's in the bloodstream. Yeah. Yeah. So it kind of regulates a bodily process. Yeah, so that people might have a misconception that vitamin D is somehow going into your bones or anything. No, it regulates how the bones are built. And I think we mentioned this, just incidentally, I think we mentioned this back when we talked about breastfeeding, but on the topic of developing bones, I did find it puzzling and perhaps somewhat amusing that when we had our baby, a year ago or so, we were told, a huge amount of the literature on breastfeeding is that it's the only food your baby needs. It's all, you know, it's complete. It's got everything you need. It's this wonderful magical substance. And then a couple of weeks later, a health visitor comes to your house and says, oh, by the way, if you're doing exclusive breastfeeding, you need to also give your child a vitamin D supplement. It's like, well, come on, then, is it complete or not?
You know, that's fascinating, isn't it?
If you're using formula milk, you don't need to do that because the companies have put vitamin D into the formula milk.
I remember you saying that, well, when your little one was born, and also... Yeah. It's just, yeah, oh, yeah, they don't tell you that, do they?
Yeah. It's a very, very strange thing. So you do need to get vitamin D.
Yeah.
If you have a serious vitamin D deficiency, you'll get soft bones, right? There's no dispute about that. Especially with kids, you don't want them to have low levels of vitamin D.
Yeah. But so, I imagine we'll come back to, presumably there's a, you know, on vitamin supplements where they all say helps for with normal bone development or whatever, you know, and what they mean is the amount that you, if any more than this is doing no good whatsoever, but we sort of try and hint that it's important, because yes, that you need to get taking more food in some way. And I dare say we'll come back to that.
We will indeed come back to, you know, what is a normal level and so on. Mm. So we know that about vitamin D, but then the question is, what about all the other claims that you see? You see all these other claims about other conditions, psychological conditions, you know, cardiovascular conditions, all sorts of stuff that may or may not relate to vitamin D. And in fact, if you look through the scientific literature, there are studies that claim to show relations between vitamin D and all sorts of kind of signaling pathways. So these kind of complex chemical biochemical mechanisms within the cell that vitamin D seems to have some impact on. And there are, you know, rat models where vitamin D is claimed to reduce tumor growth. And there are other kind of studies similar to that for cardiovascular disease growth. And there's stuff about inflammation, and there's stuff about cell death, and there's stuff about glucose metabolism. And so you can find, if you look in the literature, you can kind of find people hypothesizing mechanisms for how vitamin D might affect human health, although it's all at a fairly low level and it's in, you know, rats and so on, these kind of mechanistic studies.
Okay.
And then, so what you know, the stage beyond that, the stage beyond just, you know, finding weird chemical relations in rats, is to go to observational studies.
Yeah.
To say, like, okay, we've got these potentially promising mechanisms. Is it the case that vitamin D is related to health at all in humans?
Yeah. So, like, because all these things you've been saying, I mean, you mentioned mortality and cancer and a whole crazy bunch of things. Yeah. Like, it's not just bones.
Well, no, exactly. So yeah, non-bone related health, is it related? Well, actually, if you look at the observational studies, that is, take a very large sample of people, check them for their vitamin D status. So, you know, you do a blood test and you check what your level of vitamin D is in your blood. And then just correlate that with some kind of health status measure. So levels of depression, levels of cardiovascular risk measures, cancer rates, levels of cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's diagnoses, and then track people over time. And see, you know, if these levels relate to their mortality risk. Do people who have higher levels of vitamin D at one point live longer than people who don't? And in every case, the answer is yes.
Yes. But you will rightly point out that you could do a similar study for, I don't know, barber jackets or something like that. And you would find that people who own barber jackets are systematically healthier than people who don't. And you say, well, barber jackets cause, you know, this great, you know, they and people say, well, no, because people who have barber jackets tend to be rich and spend a lot of time outdoors, and these things are in them. So I just wonder if we might be coming back to a bit of the old confounding there,
yes,
Stuart.
Exactly. A huge amount of this evidence is from confounded observational studies. And when you find correlations between stuff, that's interesting, but it doesn't tell you what causes what. I mean, it's one of the most basic points that we emphasize all the time on this podcast. And you know, vitamin D causes better health is not the only explanation for the correlations that you find between vitamin D status and health outcomes, right? There's other explanations too. So here's a quote from a really good Scientific American article. In fact, you can read it, Tom, because I've been doing lots of talking.
You have. But you have got a very nice voice, Stuart. So it's okay. For instance, people who take vitamin D supplements may be more health conscious and do other things that protect them from disease. And people who are already in poor health probably spend less time outdoors getting vitamin D from sunlight.
So you just have to think about it a little bit and you think, well, actually, okay, if I find a correlation between vitamin D and some health outcome, it's not just because of a causal, there are other possible explanations, and it's very hard to rule those out. Pre-existing bad health might cause you to get less vitamin D, as you just said, because you might stay inside more and, yeah, and not get so much sunlight.
But also, yeah, there'd be third factor type things, like if you're the, well, if you're the sort of person who is who might spend all day sitting at home in a darkened room playing video games,
yes,
or, you know, eating bad food and that sort of stuff, that could lead to both a lack of vitamin D and poor health through other,
right, exactly,
through other, exactly, mechanisms.
So it's the barber jackets thing. And this is the case for all these studies. And even when they try to control for stuff, it still is very tricky. It still is very, very tricky to properly measure, you know, those kind of outcomes and control for them. So it's really, you know, it's, I'm interested when I see a study that that correlates vitamin D status with some outcome, but I'm not actually, you know, impressed by it.
No, this is why we don't believe smoking causes cancer.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? Because
it is the problem.
We talked about this last week when we were talking about loneliness and smoking. There are lots of mechanistic, you know, good mechanistic reasons why we think smoking causes cancer, even if we've never done a randomized controlled trial of it. Although, as I said last week, we have done randomized controlled trials of people quitting smoking,
yeah,
and cancer rates and stuff. But actually, you know, some people might argue, well, there is a mechanism here. Isn't it the case that a big part of the population are deficient in vitamin D? And if you're deficient in vitamin D, then maybe it has all these, you know, we talked about those RAP studies, those mechanistic studies and so on. And if you're deficient, then that's going to cause problems, isn't it, for your health?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly plausibly, you know, well, I suppose if you are deficient in something, then you haven't got enough of it. And that means it's called, you know, what does it mean to be deficient otherwise? So yes, if that's true, I would expect.
Depends on what the word deficient means. And
yes,
that
does,
is something which we'll just briefly talk about before we get into the trials. The Scientific American article that I mentioned is really good by Christy Eshwandan. It's really good about not just the studies on vitamin D, but the kind of story of where this idea that everyone is deficient in vitamin D came from. It turns out it's bullshit.
Ah, no, that's a mistake.
Yeah. So there was a committee in 2011 at the Institute of Medicine, which is an American, you know, organization, and they got together and said that 12 to 16 nanograms per milliliter of vitamin D in your blood,
yeah,
on the basis of their reading of the evidence, that's where the benefits for bone health kind of plateaued. So, you know, above that, it was looking, you know, but below that, you might still need a bit more vitamin D, but above that, you're plateauing off.
Okay.
And certainly, by the time you get to 20 nanograms per milliliter, you're not going to get any more benefits. That's what they said in their report. Then, according to this article, there was some confusion because some doctors interpreted the 20 as the target rather than the kind of maximum. They kind of assumed that that was like, oh, that's what people are aiming for. We want to get 20. When actually, according to the guidelines, you could be at 12 and you would still be fine. But some people were assuming that if you were below 20, you were somehow deficient. So
okay.
There was
a
confusion already, some misunderstanding. But it was worse because other guidelines put out by the Endocrine Society, which is, you know, an academic society, they had a panel and they put out some guidelines around about the same time that said that if you have 20 to 29 nanograms per milliliter, then that's an insufficiency. And actually, you should be up at 30. Now, that's not the same word as deficiency, and it's quite hard to know exactly what that means in comparison to deficiency and whether it's different. But they talked about insufficiency rather than deficiency, and so now there's even more confusion.
Right, but okay, so I'm going to get annoyed because I like language to be nice and clear. And
yeah,
either of those, if you've got a deficiency or an insufficiency in a health-related bodily sort of substance, surely that means you've not got enough to be at optimal health.
To be healthy. You would think that, wouldn't you?
Otherwise, what the hell are we doing? But sorry, carry on.
Unfortunately, it turns out that one of the major authors on the Endocrine Society guidelines was a chap who was a very strong vitamin D advocate and has written a book called The Vitamin D Solution, a three-step strategy to cure our most common health problems. And he is just a hardcore vitamin D fan.
Okay.
So he has something of a conflict of interest, given that that paper is there. He denies having a conflict of interest. He denied that to the Scientific American journalist. But those guidelines have been strongly criticized because they massively overplay the amount of vitamin D that you need, given the studies. I mean, the studies looked as if things were leveling off way, 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 way before that.
Yeah.
And so if you measure most people in kind of, you know, rich industrialized countries, they're well within the guidelines, and they're not actually deficient. They're well within the kind of Institute of Medicine sensible guidelines for where you need to be to have, you know, perfectly fine health. And the whole thing is this massive overblown confusion based on these very subjective guidelines, and guidelines that were dramatically, you know, the goalposts were massively moved by this Endocrine Society report, because potentially because one of their authors kind of got it into his head that vitamin D is the most important thing in the world.
So you could have literally double the healthy level and people would still be telling you that you know, if you had 29 nanograms per milliliter, you would be comfortably double double the bottom of the healthy range, and they'd be saying, "Oh dear, it strikes me as an insufficiency." That's...
You're looking like you've got an insufficiency. Yeah, yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. I'm really surprised by that. Okay.
These are all subjective things anyway, but the Institute of Medicine criticized the Endocrine Society and said, on our reading of the evidence, there's just no need for this at all. Mm. So you're going to be telling loads of people that they have a problem, and in fact, they don't.
Yeah. And presumably, as you say, these are pretty subjective best guess guidelines anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not as if, well, they're, even this is taken from correlational
and
studies.
They're from correlational studies too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think my understanding is from the article is that the Institute of Medicine are redrafting some new guidelines now based on the evidence that you can glean from the trials. So it's trials that have given people like different amounts of vitamin D, and they're trying to synthesize, you know, where the optimal health is from there. It's not good.
That's a good start.
This idea about, you know, there's so many people with vitamin D deficiency is really not the case, as far as I can tell.
It's funny, I know so many, I think it's generally told to women, isn't it? A lot of women are told they have it. I wonder if, I don't know.
People from Scotland, Tom, as well?
Yep, people, yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
very
don't
dark
get any
up there.
Sunlight up there, yeah, exactly. But that's, yeah, you see, people are told this, we will definitely know several people who are taking vitamin D supplements.
Yep.
And it is interesting to know whether they have what the Institute of Medicine would call a perfectly healthy level of vitamin
yes.
D. That'd be interesting to find out.
And I think that almost definitely they would. If they eat a kind of, you know, standard balanced diet, occasionally eat fish, go out in the sun every so often, as most people do in kind of, you know, rich industrialized Western countries. Again, I just want to make this argument before we go into the trials. I just want to say that in a lot of cases, including a lot of the things that we've talked about on this podcast before, this is where the evidence ends, right? You've got correlational studies, and you've got some people who have made like guidelines based on those correlational studies. Think about ultra processed foods.
Mm.
There's that one trial that we talked about in the episode, which is on like 20 people per group or something like that, 10 people, I can't remember. It was very, very small numbers of people.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of the evidence, all of the rest of the evidence, is on observational studies. And then you've got people coming in and saying, this is, you know, this is how much you should have each day. And, you know, people make these dietary guidelines and so on. This is where the evidence ends for a lot of cases. There aren't randomized trials. We'd have had to stop the podcast at this point because there aren't randomized trials to discuss. Luckily for vitamin D, there are randomized trials, and they do tell you, a rather different story from the observational study. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because, I mean, this has generally been my criticism of all dietary science, really, is like you say, people tell you need to, you know, whatever is a superfood. Well, how the hell do you know? Like, do you have you done 10,000? You know, have you given 10,000 people goji berries and 10,000 people like placebo goji berries?
Yeah.
And seen who? No, of course you haven't. You've just seen that people who eat goji berries, if we're lucky, you've seen that people who eat goji berries have slightly better health, or whatever. Or more likely, you've found some chemical in a goji berry and then drawn some complicated pathway saying
right. So the mechanism stuff, the observational stuff,
And so anyway. But I'm pulling you off the topic because you were about to tell us about actual trials, Stuart. Tell us about actual trials.
Yeah. And there are now quite a few of them, because from about 2017 there were these kind of mega trials done with thousands of people in each one on vitamin D, because I think there had just built up enough observational evidence and kind of mechanistic evidence that people thought this was worth funding. Governments and so on thought that this was worth pouring some money in to actually do a trial, and good on them for that. I mean, this is exactly what we need to do, and we need to do it for a lot more things. So this is pretty much all these trials are for people who have normal levels of vitamin D. So within the kind of the standard Institute of Medicine range, they're vitamin D replete, as it says. So not severe deficiency, just getting people maybe from a lower range to a higher range within the normal.
So 12 to 16 nanograms per milliliter in your, or thereabouts in your...
Yeah, I mean, the thing is it differs because in some of the trials they're given a bigger amount. Okay. So some of them are given larger doses and so on. So it becomes a bit more complicated. So everything we say, you know, you need to just, if you're really interested in this, go and have a look, because some trials give a higher dose and some people had lower doses to begin with. And so, you know, it's complicated.
Okay.
When it comes to the actual dosage and stuff.
Normal healthy range as far as by some measure.
These are not people who are considered to be vitamin D, like severe deficiency to the point that they're like at risk of getting osteomalacia, things like that.
Okay.
The adult rickets one. Which, by the way, there are lots of people there are people who have that issue. They have severe deficiencies.
Okay.
But it's not that the average person walking around has this deficiency. At least according to the Institute of Medicine guidelines. Several studies in thousands of people. The biggest is this study, the VITAL study.
Now, oh, go on.
Just take a moment? Yeah.
Go on then. What's VITAL stand for?
The acronym. So it's all caps, VITAL.
Yeah.
Unbelievably, this is what it stands for. The vitamin, so V-I-T from vitamin.
Yeah.
D, obviously it's capital D, but obviously the letter D is not in the word vital. So I assume they're just skipping over the capital D of vitamin D, because you can't write vitamin D with a lowercase d.
Yeah.
So it's vitamin D and omega 3, but the A of omega is capitalized.
This is just so crap.
So we've got V-I-T-A so far, vita. Yeah. So omega 3, trial, but the L is capitalized.
Honestly, it's like...
So that's vital. That's vitamin D and omega 3.
You know when, like, spies trial. Oh, God. It's so bad. It's so bad. It gives me physical pain. It's like those, you know, the... when spies in code breakers in spy novels have to get a book, and then you go down to the third page of
hiding messages. Yeah,
exactly. This, you know, in this copy of the Fleurs du Mal or whatever, and you go through, and you know, it's like that. You're picking random letters out from the middle of a word.
One of the most contrived study names that we've ever seen. And we've seen some bad
astonishing.
Ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's vital. It's a minor issue. What really is vital is that it was a good quality study. So it had nearly 26,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Average age 67.
Okay.
So it tends to be older people. These studies tend to have older people in general because the sorts of things we're looking for, cancer, cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes risk, like all these kind of things, just tend to happen more often in older people. So that's the kind of population that is studied here.
Mm-hmm.
VITAL had all these people, and it was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. Classic, exactly what you want. A wee bit more complex than perhaps you'd want if you were only interested in vitamin D, because as we've just said, it also has omega-3, so it's like a 2x2 design where you can either get both vitamin D and omega-3, or just one of those, or neither of those. That was the groups that people were split into.
Yeah.
And the results are no significant effects of vitamin D on cancer or cardiovascular disease. Those are the main things that particular study looked at. And apparently this was a real surprise to the authors. They were not expecting to find null results, small effects, I should say.
Well done them for then going and publishing it and saying
they did. You know, this, they did publish it. I do think, unfortunately, they do try and do a little bit of spinning to kind of get something out of it and make it sound like it's kind of maybe something possibly is going to happen. So they said vitamin D did not significantly reduce the primary endpoint of total invasive cancer incidence, but showed a promising signal for reduction in total cancer mortality. And then they provide a confidence interval that goes through zero, which means, it goes through one. So it goes through no effect, which means it's not statistically significantly different from zero effect. And yet they call it promising anyway.
Yeah.
Which is a bit annoying.
Yeah, I can see what, I mean, I can sort of, you know, it has a ratio of 0.83. I can sort of go, come on, this should mean something. It feels big, but it's not statistically significant.
You've got to be very careful with this. You've got to be very careful with that, because it's very rare that people would argue that if something was just significant, it's very rare that you see people saying, it's not promising.
Yeah,
they jump on it and they say this is significant. This is the best thing ever. Things always trend towards significance and never away from significance.
It annoys me, the trending. It's not trending anything. It's just a single point.
It's just a result.
Exactly. I will also say that, as will long time listeners, or like people who've been listening for more than 6 weeks, will remember the Bayes episode. And there's a thing in Bayesian. Well, you're not just interested in the likelihood of seeing this result under the null hypothesis. You're also interested in how likely it would be under the if there was really some effect. And actually, if there was a strong effect like on cancer mortality, quite often you'd see it would be unlikely to see a result this week. You know, that result so that's Lindley's paradox. So maybe quite often weak results like this are actually evidence against your hypothesis if you're doing the sensible thing and comparing it to another one. But I don't actually know it's the case here. It's so weak that I'd be...
It's very, very... Yeah, it's borderline, isn't it? And very small. But they did find statistically significant results. If they did kind of extra analysis and they kind of cut out the first year or the first 2 years of the follow-up, and that basically means that you're just like having a higher chance that the outcomes will occur.
Yeah, did they do multiple tests for multiple comparisons? You can't do that. You can't just just chop out some data and say then it works.
I think this is sometimes done in trials, but the question would be whether they registered it, and I don't know if they did or not. I haven't actually looked that up. If they registered it, then fair enough, but I don't think it sounds like they did. You know, if you chop the data up a little bit more, then you find a result. Of course, you're getting a smaller and smaller sample by that point because people will drop out of the study as time goes on. It seems pretty unconvincing to me. So you need to look at some other studies.
The Studies Show is brought to you by Works in Progress. Now, listeners to last week's episode will notice that we discovered an article on Works in Progress by a handsome young journalist called Tom Chivers. And it made me think, maybe if we look into the recesses of Works in Progress's archives, you might find one by any... sort of slow and stupid and inadequate writers called Stuart Ritchie. And indeed I did. Found one called Who Cares About Plagiarism, which Stuart Ritchie ripped off from someone else, I assume.
Yeah, I think there is a joke at the end along those lines of the article. But yeah, that was... It continually becomes relevant, that, because there are often plagiarism scandals in academia. And I wrote this article... basically kind of talking about there are some people who take plagiarism extremely seriously for obvious reasons, and then there are others who kind of think that it's a lesser crime. Certainly self-plagiarism, when you just rewrite bits that you've already written, is a lesser crime. And then you know, plagiarism, stealing people's ideas, well, you know, people put ideas out into the public sphere and that's what they're for, and you know, it doesn't matter if you steal them. And I kind of argued against that because I actually think that plagiarism is a really good flag of basically being a bad person, a bad academic, a bad writer, even if the plagiarism itself is forgivable or whatever, or all part of the general playing around with ideas.
Yeah.
The fact that you've done it and not acknowledged it is a red flag, but you've probably done bad things elsewhere. And I should just, apropos of nothing, mention mm-hmm. that Francesca Gino, the Harvard professor who was accused of fraud, has recently been accused of plagiarism as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll also mention, apropos of nothing, that I reviewed Johan Hari's new book in The Guardian recently. uh-huh. I'll just bring that up so you can go.
Just because you reviewed a book, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing to do with anything.
So you can find my article on plagiarism and so many other interesting articles on all sorts of topics about human progress. Where, Tom?
At worksinprogress.co, Stuart. So we hope to see you there, even though we can't because it's a website and it's not how it works.
But we hope to direct you there and we hope that you get something out of it. And we're really grateful that the team at Works in Progress have sponsored the study show.
Yeah. And now back to the show.
And luckily, there are other studies. There's another study called the D-Health Trial. This is from Australia. So it's vitamin D in health. Similar setup to Vital, except it didn't have omega-3. So it's actually, you know, it's a bigger study because they had around about the same sample size, but it was all about vitamin D and placebo, not. I think they may have had different doses as well, but it wasn't about omega-3 as well in combination, you know. And they found no overall effect on vitamin D on all-cause mortality. Death from any cause.
Yeah. No, so it didn't stop you from being hit by buses.
Indeed, which would have been quite amazing. When they look at cancer deaths, they did the same analysis as Vital when they cut out the first 2 years of the follow-up. So they did this kind of extra analysis thing. And what they found was... Tom, I'll hand it over to you again.
Oh, no. An exploratory analysis. In exploratory analyses, excluding the first 2 years of follow-up, those randomly assigned to receive vitamin D had a numerically higher hazard of cancer mortality than those in the placebo group. Oops. Hazard ratio 1.24. And that's the confidence interval doesn't include one, so it is statistically significant.
It's like right on the very edge. P equals 0.05. So I would say that's probably not... You'll see why I think it's probably not statistically significantly different from zero.
Well, but... So the confidence interval is 1.01 to 1.54. Unless there's something, I'm sure you can tell me why there's reason not to consider it. But just given that, it scrapes that is mathematically the same as being technically statistically significant.
It is, I'll give some context. But they basically found that there was a statistically significantly higher risk of cancer mortality if you had more vitamin D. In this trial. Oops.
Yeah, it's fair. That's very funny. I mean, it's not good for the people who died of cancer because they took too much vitamin D.
But it casts the previous study in a new light as well. Desperately trying to find risks. And actually, it's about the same effect in the opposite direction as well. So it's like 24% raised likelihood, and they found about 25% less likelihood. So, grimly...
17%. That's 17% less, I think. Wasn't it? Oh no! You're right. You're at 25. Sorry, that was for the 2 years. I do apologize.
For the two years. Yeah. So grimly amusing that they seem to go in the opposite direction. People who got a dose of vitamin D were more likely to die from cancer in that study. What about the cardiovascular stuff? Well, they published those results in the BMJ in 2023. The journal that used to be called the British Medical Journal.
Yes, the artist formerly known as and now it's known as KFC. Got it? Yep.
Yeah, or BP. Same thing there. Not British Petroleum anymore. It's just BP. Yeah. Anyway, the BMJ, and it's a classic example of, I would say again, spin taking results that are not statistically significantly different from zero and writing them up as if they're like, oh, promising, moving in the right direction. The rate of major cardiovascular events, they say, was lower in the vitamin D group than in the placebo group.
Yeah.
And then you read the results and the hazard ratio, the confidence interval for the hazard ratio goes through one. So it's not statistically significantly different from zero. And they themselves then conclude in the same paper, vitamin D supplementation might reduce the incidence of major cardiovascular events, although the absolute risk difference was small and the confidence interval was consistent with a null finding.
Ronald Fisher would tell them off, wouldn't they? You know, supposed to, if it's, if in his in his sort of system, if it's below, not below 0.05, then you should treat it as completely ignore, was his phrase, wasn't it?
Well, I thought you, yeah, I thought if something was consistent with a null finding, then you don't write it up as if it might be, a not, it might be a you know,
trending
positive
towards
finding.
Significance. Yeah.
I just find it annoying because they seem to be talking out of both sides of their mouths. A lot of these researchers, they do admit, and they, you know, they write their numbers down. You can see that it's a lot of these results are not significant, but they write them up as if they are. And you could even make arguments about, like, oh well, in a later meta-analysis, if you put all these results together, then you might find results. But there's clearly a bit of spin going on here to make the things seem to make, maybe they were disappointed that they didn't find any results for vitamin D.
Yeah, I wonder if a lot of, you know, I think, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of researchers sort of assume that it is going to be good because you've heard so many things about how great it is.
Right.
And then you might be a bit surprised that it's not. And, you know, like everything else, you go into these things researching them because...
Right, because you think there might be something real.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And you might have a bias towards finding something real, you know, or something positive, you know. Here's another thing, though, which I think should give us even more pause when we see these results. And by the way, how many results have we seen that are like right on the very borderline of statistical significance? They're like either just significant or just not. They're right there. Which, by the way, if, you know, if you've got a lot of that across lots of different studies, that does imply that there might be some, you know, leaning on the results a little bit to get them just over the line, p-hacking. We've talked about that before, but
or
actually
publication bias and things like that.
Well, or in some cases publication bias. In this case, though, I actually think it's not so much that the publication bias is the problem, because they do publish a lot of stuff and they publish a lot of null results. It's just that they publish an awful lot of null results. They have published so many papers on the DHealth study on all. They basically, you name a condition, they have checked whether their people suffer from it after either taking vitamin D or not, you know, being randomized to the vitamin D group or not, and then waiting a certain amount of time. Cognitive impairment.
Yeah.
No effect.
Oh, dear.
Depression. No effect.
Yeah. Oh.
Diversity of the microbiome.
Oh, big
no
deal.
Effect.
Oh.
Sorry to disappoint you. Telomere length, you know, the end of the
shoelaces on your genes,
the aging related caps on the end of the chromosomes, no effect. Hypothyroidism, no effect. Erectile dysfunction, giving a new meaning to D health.
Yes, I've been wondering about making a D joke at some point. But anyway, I didn't. Yeah. Anyway, so did it?
No
did,
effect. Was,
so the results were soft, unfortunately.
No. exactly. Falls, you know, obviously you might worry about falls because older people have falls. If they have problems with their bones, that might, you know,
they might have been more, got more brittle. So okay, so the well, I'm interested here. Okay, so
it seems more plausible, doesn't it?
I can see how that would make sense, but it sort of implies your bones would break before you fell, which
it might make you more. If your bones are a bit wobbly, then maybe it makes you more susceptible to falling over.
Generally less stable. Yeah, I can go and see that.
No effect.
Okay.
Bone fractures. No effect. And in fact, some people were worried that actually there was some evidence from other studies that if you gave people a particularly high level of vitamin D, it might make fractures worse because it basically just disrupts the kind of bone functions that we were talking about at the very start. But that didn't happen in the D Health study either. So given how, and this is just that's just a sample, by the way, given just how many results they've attempted to look at and how many null results they've found, it's a bit like, you know that classic XKCD thing where it's like jelly beans cure acne and then, you know, red jelly beans, they find no effect. Blue jelly beans, they find no effect. Green jelly beans, they find no effect. Yellow jelly beans and so on. And they try it like 20 times and then eventually like purple jelly beans or whatever it is do cure acne, but they've just rolled the dice 20 times, and you would expect to find a false positive 1 in 20 times.
Yeah. I've used that exact cartoon. It's on BuzzFeed, or it used to be before BuzzFeed died. Like, I've used it several times to explain this is how, like,
false positives.
Exactly. This is exactly how if you test your data in loads of different ways, looking for something until you find it. This is exactly how you do it. Just giving yourself more chances of a coincidence.
Yeah, you're rolling the dice again and again and again. And, you know, they might, at some point you've got to think about this, correcting for all these different comparisons you're doing. So I would basically just like mentally adjust any of these p-values or confidence intervals that they find. I would say, you know, the ones that are just on the border of being, you know, statistically significant, I would say that they're basically not, because they've just tested so many different things here. Mm. Obviously, you've got to be careful with this. When you're testing things within the same study, they're not independent tests. So it's not like you can do the Bonferroni correction where you just like divide the p-value threshold by the number of tests you've done. That's far too conservative. So we don't want to be too conservative. But you need to do some kind of adjustment for the fact that you're running so many tests and thus increasing your chance of finding a false positive. And they've done that across loads and loads of studies within this same data set. So I feel like you've got to take that into account as well.
Yeah, it completely makes sense to me, because like they're just... Obviously, if you keep, well, we've just said it a million times, if you roll a d20 20 times, you can expect to see a 1 once.
Yeah, right, if you just keep testing for every condition, eventually, just, you know, spuriously, you're going to find a condition that vitamin D seems to work for.
I feel like I could have made a vitamin D20 joke there somehow.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, it would have been very good if you'd come up with one.
Yeah, it would have been. And also then have to explain to all the non-complete losers among our audience who don't
it's a 20-sided dice that nerds use in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, exactly.
So there are studies that are much more kind of realistic about this. There's a 2022 review in Nature Reviews Endocrinology, which... Yeah. Doesn't include the D-Health results, but looks at the other big trials that happened before that. Mm. And I was very refreshed to see how null it was. Like, it just said, no spin, no nonsense, just basically stating something doesn't work. It only works in, you know, in these particular like subgroup analyses, which are less reliable. Yeah. In conclusion, supplementation of vitamin D replete individuals does not provide demonstrable health benefits. This conclusion does not contradict older guidelines that severe vitamin D deficiency should be prevented or corrected. So, fine.
Yeah. You know. So, if you've got enough vitamin D, there's no evidence, as far as we can see, that giving you more vitamin D is any good. Exactly. If you have got an actual deficiency, then obviously, because it's a deficiency and that's what it means, you should supplement it. By the way, I just want to revisit the thing I said a minute ago about calling Dungeons & Dragons players a complete losers. I feel bad about that. That was a horrible thing to say, and I apologize.
As someone who recently spent 100 hours playing Baldur's Gate 3, where it's entirely based on Dungeons & Dragons,
Dungeons and Dragons is brilliant, and I play loads of Warhammer, so who the hell am I to talk? Anyway, so
even lower Warhammer's even lower status lower than status, Dungeons and Dragons,
yeah.
Tom.
Yeah. So I prostrate myself at your feet. And yeah. I imagine quite a lot of Dungeons and Dragons players listen to us, so I thought I should revisit that. Anyway, moving on.
Thank you. And by the way, you can take too much vitamin D. There was a story recently in the news that a guy in the UK died after he took a vitamin D overdose. Vitamin D toxicity, they were talking about. And that, you know, obviously that's just one weird anecdote, but we did see some results in these trials, the odd one that pops up now and again, where it's, the vitamin D is actually associated with a bad outcome.
Yeah, well, it's definitely giving you cancer. Remember, we saw it.
The cancer one. Yeah. So the whole thing, you know, that MP, Rupa Huck, I mentioned at the start, the whole thing she said about no downside, well, maybe actually that's not true.
Oh, yes. But that reminds me, because we kicked off this whole thing talking about COVID, and we haven't actually talked about COVID. So
yes, that's true. We should mention COVID. Now, obviously, I find it very difficult to care about, we've got vaccines for COVID. I find it very difficult to care whether some, like, thing that was flavor of the month for a while during the pandemic, when we were all just desperate to find anything that might work. It's true, but it was a big discussion point. There was, I remember getting tweets from some guy who'd made a whole website where he was like going through all the evidence from observational studies and totally convinced himself that vitamin D was like the ultimate thing. And then, of course, you know, at one point it was hydroxychloroquine was the thing, and then at one point it was ivermectin was the thing. And
people
then
made all these incredible websites of just huge, like assessing all these vast numbers of studies.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time that they dedicated.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, people had a lot of time on their hands during the pandemic, I guess. But I think the COVID case is actually like a mini version of what we've talked about already, which is there were observational studies that said that people who had higher levels of vitamin D tended to get COVID less often.
Yeah.
But then somebody came along and did an actual trial where they randomly gave people vitamin D or a you know a placebo, and they found.
Oh, I'm going to go ahead and guess no effect.
Well, so in there, so they had about 6,000 people in this trial, which was done in the UK. 4.6% of participants who didn't have any vitamin D, you know, who were in the kind of no extra vitamin D group, got an acute respiratory tract infection. So some of that is COVID and some of it is other stuff, but it's during the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
4.6% of the people. Then 5.7% of the people who had low dose of vitamin D got some respiratory tract infection, and 5.0% in the higher dose group got infection. So both of those are numerically higher than the control group. So again, it seems worse. However, statistically significantly, there's absolutely nothing going on there.
The confidence intervals go way either side of one.
Flat as a pancake. The results there. Nothing happening. No reason to think that vitamin D would be a good COVID prevention method, despite the nice, you know, Labour and Tory Rupa Huck. And it was David Davis, the other, the Conservative MP, who was very big into this. I don't think I mentioned it at all.
Was it David Davis, the one who was in the territorial SAS? Was that David Davis?
I don't.
There's a David Davis and David Davies. Anyway, David Davis was also the one who said, "Look, I'm not the sort of father who helps out doing nappies, but I will be the sort of father who teaches my children scuba diving." And I thought, that's brilliant. I didn't realize that was the option. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Can I be that parent, please?
For years, say, well, at some point, I'm going to do the scuba diving.
Exactly. I loved it. Absolutely brilliant. Anyway, so yes, that's a shame because they were, you know, holding hands across the barricades and singing Kumbaya and all that sort of stuff.
But they just had convinced themselves of this, and it just was simply not true. So I think basically nobody believes that is the case anymore. And I did find a meta-analysis as well about respiratory tract infections, and there was, again, shockingly enough, it was like right on the very border of statistical significance again. And I'm just, I find the borderline nature of the results here is really quite depressing.
Irritating. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Conclusions then.
Conclude. Yes. What do you conclude?
Well, I conclude that it's about bones. Vitamin D is about bones. Mm. I'm convinced of that. You get rickets if you don't have enough vitamin D when you're a kid. You get osteomalacia if you don't have it when you're an adult. You don't have enough of it when you're an adult. It may be the case that if you have darker skin or you spend a lot of time indoors or you live in a country that doesn't have much sunshine or you are completely covered up for like religious reasons or whatever, then you might need to, you know, you're probably at higher risk of getting a vitamin D deficiency. Although even then, that Scientific American article pointed out that there is reason to think that that's a bit overblown and some tests might actually underestimate the amount of vitamin D people have because they only test for one particular type of it in your bloodstream. And in fact, there's another type which can kind of make up for having lower levels of the first type.
Right.
So even that stuff might be overblown too, and this might all just be a completely fake panic. It's just terrifying to think about. And for other non-bone related stuff, despite an awful lot of attempts to find results, all those studies we talked about.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long show notes because I've referenced a lot of studies in this episode. An awful lot of wild claims in the media and, to be fair, in the scientific literature itself. It's not just journalists that are doing this.
No.
I'm not convinced at all that vitamin D has any effect on anything that isn't to do with your bones.
Yes, and anything does any good at all beyond the pretty low apparently healthy range.
Yeah.
So like going above the amount that you very easily get from eating like one fish a year.
Eating a small amount of fish, going out into the sun sometimes. Maybe at some point, like if the trials run for more years, we'll find that there's some small effect on mortality or something. But it's got to be a really small effect. And it's definitely not a wonder stuff.
Yeah.
As Rupa Hutt
size of a cow.
Sorry,
that just amuses me.
And if you're, you know, unless you're very specifically talking about bone health, which it is pretty amazing how it works for that, but that's not something that we've dwelt on for obvious reasons in this talk.
And, but also, because no one gets rickets in the UK, really, because most people, well, I mean, sure, some do, but it's actually pretty rare to be that deficient. That's not what, when people are taking these supplements, they're not worried that they're going to develop rickets. They're worried about these unspecified.
Exactly. Yeah. When you go and buy vitamin D supplements from, you know, whatever health shop you go to, You're not worried about getting rickets. You're worried about all these other things. As you say, you're worried about depression and cardiovascular disease and cancer and all the things that people claim.
But no evidence.
Well, which is just certainly no convincing evidence. And as I've said, you know, multiple times already, it's really important to note that this is a parable about all sorts of health claims, whether it's dietary stuff, whether it's experiences, whether it's activities, whether it's exercise, all these sort of things. If you've just got observational studies, it can often be completely, you can be completely misled.
Yeah.
And then when someone comes along and does a randomized trial, you end up realizing that you had it completely wrong.
Yeah, it's nice so that it is satisfying and rare that there have been these excellent. And I guess it's a direct sort of a chemical intervention, like a drug that you can actually do an easy RCT on in a way that you can't with a lot of things that people talk about when they're saying, you know, that red wine or whatever causes.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do an RCT on red wine very easily.
Yeah, vitamin D doesn't have a psychoactive effect that you'd notice when you've taken it or when you've not taken it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a thing that lends itself to these RCTs, which makes it plausible. But it is nice to see they've done it, and it's also kind of, like you say, grimly funny that they then find either null results or occasionally, you know, that they call it makes things worse.
It might make things worse. Yeah.
I'm with you. I think they're probably coincidences on the other side of it.
I think so. Yeah, I think you just have, you know, loads of results just bouncing around zero. Occasionally, something bounces far enough out from zero to look like it's statistically significant, but actually I wouldn't really put much store in that whatsoever. And you're just like trying to pan for like little tiny little flecks of gold, you know, rather than seeing anything massive that you can really grab onto. So yeah. I'm not impressed really by the vitamin D stuff. I think your doctor friend who told you that you might as well just pour all your vitamin supplements down the toilet. For vitamin D, certainly that's true. Maybe in future we'll do episodes on other vitamins and we can see whether that's true for other things and other supplements in general. There might be other supplements that make differences for things.
Other things.
I'm open to the idea that there are some supplements that might help you lift more weights in the gym or run slightly longer distances. I don't know.
Yeah,
well, let's find out when we look at the evidence. But for vitamin D, which has been studied very extensively in high quality trials, I'd say it's a thumbs down from me.
Yeah. Absolutely. I can still picture my friend George doing this miming, just miming, throwing each pill down the toilet one after the other.
Right. Blop, having blop, a big flush.
Yeah, exactly. So it still makes me chuckle. Anyway, so that's a big no on convincing evidence on vitamin D.
Indeed. Thank you for listening. If you want to hear more episodes of The Study Show, then you can go to thestudyshowpod.com. Where you can find all our previous episodes. And there's another thing you can do, Tom, isn't that right?
There is. You can sign up to become a paid subscriber at thestudyshowpod.com, which I believe Stuart just mentioned. Yeah. And then you'll get access to our all our paid-only content, including our most recent one on the CAS youth gender medicine review, which...
controversial.
I think it's a controversial topic, but I think, well, we've had a lot of lovely feedback from it, people saying it's been a really fair treatment of
the We tried to be balanced, yeah.
We've got a lot of people signing up for it. I will also, if Stuart will forgive me, say my new book on Bayes' theorem, Everything is Predictable, is out now in the UK and out next week in the US.
All good bookshops.
Absolutely. And there is, if anybody's interested, you can come and see a talk I'm doing about it on the 16th of May at Bayes Business School in central London.
Appropriate.
Yes, exactly. And there's a meeting and a drinks reception, and I'll put the link. Well, I won't. Stuart will, because he knows how to do these things in the show notes.
do come along to that. And certainly go on to Amazon and order Tom's book. You've heard him mention Bayes many times on the podcast. And then now you'll find out what that's all about. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.
See you. Bye-bye, guys. Thanks.